This edition of the week is sponsored by Invitrogen. Gibco Cell Culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. Take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels.
This week, what it's like to be the new kid on the block.
Well, I mean, have we gained complete acceptance? No, I mean, I would say there's more people in our company that don't even know we exist than know that we exist.
Coming up in our podcast this week, we'll hear more about how systems biology is trying to fit into the drug discovery industry. But first, in news, a University of Pennsylvania researcher fakes data on nearly a dozen images, leading to the recent retraction of two papers. Alla Katz Nelson has more.
The Office of Research Integrity has concluded that Kristen Ruvers, a former postdoc in Morris Birnbaum's lab at the School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania, fabricated 19 panels of Western blot data, which appeared on 11 figures in three different studies. Two of the studies, published in Molecular and Cell Biology and Developmental Cell in 2003, were retracted in 2006. Corrections were also recommended for a third study, published in Nature Cell Biology in 2001. The retracted papers examine the relationship between actin stress fibers and the protein integrin in Rho kinase signaling. Editors at the Journal of Clinical Investigation first spotted manipulated data in a manuscript Ruvers had submitted with her colleagues, which sparked ORI's investigation. Ruvers is prohibited from working in any U.S. agency for 5 years. The scientist could not locate her for comment, but her former colleagues think she has returned to Canada.
That was Alla Katz Nelson reporting. You can read more from the Scientist Daily News at thescientist.com. Next, we turn to systems biology. In the August issue of The Scientist, Brendan Burrell asks what all the systems biology hype is about, and whether it can really do as much for drug discovery as some people hope. Burrell attended the Cambridge Health Institute's Beyond Genome Conference in San Francisco in June this year, and while he was there, he met up with Bruce Gomes, who's the head of systems biology at Pfizer. They spoke about this new approach to drug discovery, but first, Gomes gave a rundown of how drugs are traditionally developed.
The traditional reductionist pathway, I mean, what we were all trained in school, is really straightforward. So you try and isolate the variables. You try and get away from complexity as much as possible. You try and set up an assay where you've removed all possible sources of variation. You get down to the basic thing. I want to put this enzyme in, and that's my target, and I put in my drug, and it affects it or it doesn't, it inhibits it or it doesn't. I mean, that's a great approach, and that's the traditional paradigm for doing drug discovery. You know, I got a target, I invent an assay that measures it well, I put in a drug that affects that assay, I use that to design, screen, you know, lots of compounds, I pick a series, I perfect the series, I then use the perfected series to, you know, narrow it down to the optimal candidate and so forth. Only at the end of that long process, then you take that candidate and it goes into safety, and then it goes into, you know, probably in animals, and then it goes into human trial. Only at that point, at the human point, do you actually test the paradigm. Was this a good target? I mean, you've done really great science with that reductionist method, and it's been effective historically. But we have this big attrition rate. So now we have to sort of say, can we front load that complexity? Can we start thinking about, well, you know, is that trial way down the line there, when you get the proof of concept, going to work because I understand at the beginning whether this is a good target or not? And a good target means, is it going to have bad safety effects, you know, side effects that I don't know about? And a lot of that you can build into your model. So you can say, in terms of safety, you can sort of say, well, I know that target actually not only affects dread disease X, it also does something else that's important. It's there for a vital reason.
So now we're getting into the real systems biology.
Yeah, and so now we want to build models that takes that complexity into account at the beginning. And then that's the safety part of it. And then the second part of it's efficacy. We sort of say, look, somehow or other, it's traditionally known that you set up an in vitro assay for something and you lose a lot of effect, you know, and you make a great drug. It's nanomolar potency. You then go and try it in a cell, you lose a couple orders of magnitude. Then you try it in an organism, you lose a couple orders of magnitude. Why? We want to understand why that efficacy loss happens. So we want to plan for safety. We also want to plan for Why is that not happening? I mean, is it just not getting to the target? That's one possibility. The other possibility is the behaviors of that particular target are different when they're embedded in the pathway or they're in a cellular milieu.
And what would you say are the top three reasons that these drugs fail?
Oh, the top three reasons are really clear. It's either safety problems, and that knocks out most of them. Loss of property, the properties problem, which I just said about, it doesn't get to the right place, or it doesn't last long enough, or it isn't potent enough. Those kind of properties. The second one, and the third is understanding the loss of efficacy. So those three are the main kind of things that we kind of aim for.
And you think that systems biology can really target all three of those areas?
At the moment, I don't have any great success stories that I can point to a drug that's been made because systems biology has made that possible. But now we are making those kinds of contributions, at least in the biological areas, which I talked about in my talk, where we can sort of say, we can steer projects and we can help them decide on the right properties. I think ultimately there will be companies that are just totally modeled on systems biology approaches, and those will then produce better drugs faster in theory. That's sort of the promise of the future. At the moment, what my talk was all about was trying to say there are things we can do now. We can sell this. We can sell systems biology within pharmaceutical companies because there is hard work and heavy lifting that it can do at this minute in time. And maybe that's not completely designing a new drug, right, but it's aiding a lot of the steps that make that possible.
Yeah. And I guess one of the things you pointed out yesterday was just how you really need people to come at you as a modeler with just a very specific question: is this going to reach this, diffuse into this cell?
Yeah, I'm in a particularly lucky or fortunate position because most of my career was in drug discovery, the other side, not the modeling-based side. So most of my time was spent doing, setting up projects, doing what I described before as the traditional paradigm, and so I know what those guys want. So I'm very lucky now that I'm on the modeling side. When I approach them, I can say, I know exactly where you're coming from. This is the kind of question that's really gnaws at you. I can fix that. That's the only way to get that kind of acceptance. It's hard to find people, though, that understand the pharmaceutical aspect, understand the biology well enough to converse on a, biologist-to-biologist level, and can do computational methods.
Right. Thinking about that, do you think that systems biology promises more than, having to have that focus question? It seems like that there was this idea that we could go back and we could really discover drugs based on these models.
Yeah, there are companies that, GNS is a good example, who essentially want to approach drugs discovery as a hypothesis-free thing. They're not going to come in thinking I have a target at all. They're just going to say, give me a lot of data around this area, around this disease area, and we will, their particular approach is Bayesian network analysis, and they'll then analyze the heck out of that data and then be able to tell you what is the best target. And I think that's a great method, and it holds, as I say, great promise for the future. And I think ultimately that's a really good approach. I think that at the moment, what we need to be able to do, though, is that's going to be particularly a hard sell, I think, because it is a very foreign language to the biologists. What we need to do is essentially right now be able to show that systems biology methods are applicable now to gain acceptance for those more far-reaching techniques down a ways.
Yeah, I was talking to this group, this Eugene Butcher, who runs BioSeq, he sort of threw up his hands about in silico stuff and said, listen, the way to do, to find new targets is with these, these cell systems, the, human cell systems, and sort of treating them as a black box and using them to do the computation.
Well, I don't know that I disagree with that. I just, prove it to me. Basically, the bottom line is, prove me. I don't care what method, whether it's purely mathematical or treating cells as black boxes or whatever. That's fine. Prove to me that they work, and then I'll do that. I mean, there's nothing magical about computational methods. They're only successful if they deliver something that's useful to the drug discovery company. And so I'm quite willing to buy into any method and change the complete course of which I do things if that proves to be more effective than what I do.
And so, I guess, you know, do you think, I know we touched on this yesterday, is do you think that the sort of you guys have gained acceptance?
Well, I mean, have we gained complete acceptance? No. No, I mean, I would say there's more people in our company that don't even know we exist than know that we exist. So I wouldn't say we've gained that kind of acceptance. I think we've gained acceptance in certain areas, and I think we've now been sort of it's sort of now changing, and we're getting acceptance. So there's projects now starting to systems biology in oncology, systems biology in inflammation, systems biology in biologics therapies, and so forth. So those groups maybe are early acceptors. So they're sort of saying, yeah, we can see the merit of it, or at least maybe they're scientifically open-minded enough to be able to say, you know, if you prove to me that it's useful, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And so, I think that's beginning to happen. And I don't know how that's beginning to happen. I don't know if that's being forced from on high or it's because the scientists are really, you know, demanding it from within the trenches. But it is beginning. Within the last year, we are now getting that kind of acceptance. Before then, I would have said no. I would have said that we were definitely in the phase then of being able to, you know, we're begging for projects and trying to get people to understand what we do. Now we're over that. Now we're at the point where we're starting to have to prioritize what we do because there's too much to do.
That was feature writer Brendan Burrell speaking with Pfizer's head of systems biology, Bruce Gomes. You can read Burrell's article in the August issue of The Scientist or online at thescientist.com. And while you're there, you can check out our blogs, daily news stories, or other interactive web features. That's all for The Scientist podcast this week. Thanks for tuning in.
This edition of The Week was brought to you by Invitrogen. Gibco cell culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. Take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels.